One of the saddest events in the development of the Jesus movement, because that's what it was called originally. It wasn't called Christianity. It was called the Way. It was just another way of being Jewish. And one of the greatest tragedies was the fact that, especially after the year 70, when the Romans destroyed Jerusalem, that the people, the Jews who followed Jesus and the people and the Jews who did not follow Jesus became increasingly antagonistic. I mean, it's a pattern we've seen all over the history of the church. Martin Luther wanted to reform the church. Alexander VI was not interested. And so they polarized themselves, establishing extreme positions and excluding the truth of each other absolutely. And this has certainly happened between those of us who call ourselves Christians and the Jews who, as Paul describes us, are our mother soil, you know, the rootage, where we belong, where we originated from. And the readings today form a really fascinating kind of structure on which to try to look at that fact. Because one of the many things we've lost when we've denied our own Jewishness is a kind of distribution of roles that was absolutely constant all through Judaism. And this was what? The differentiation between the role of priest and the role of prophet. They're two distinctly different and often enough opposed functions in Judaism. Who are the priests? The priests were those men who kind of maintained, they were the ecclesiastical bureaucrats who maintained the religious reality, supposedly. They protected the mystery. That's what they were supposed to do. By liturgy, by prayers, by legislation. The prophets, on the other hand, were non-priests, were non-bureaucrats. If you read the prophets, they say, I'm not a prophet, I'm not the son of a prophet. Do I have anything to do with prophets? This is the great Amos speaking. The prophets were those people who believed that God was renewing her presence with them and constantly enlivening, refurbishing the religious phenomenon out of which the whole operation began in the first place. If you take Max Weber's, the great sociologist model, you could say that the priests were in charge of the routinization, the making routine of religion, while the prophets were these charismatic, these gifted people who constantly enlivened, constantly pointed to the originating phenomenon. And historically, and this is what we get in the prophet Malachi today, those two sets of authorities were antagonistic often enough because the priest, the hierarchy, if you will, basically aggrandized all authority to themselves. And the prophets constantly had to cut them down, say, no, 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 no. You have moved so far apart from this originating event, and all these institutions and patterns that you've established have done nothing but bury or obscure or occlude the religious reality. The mystery. I talked last week about mystery, and to my horror, when I got home, I thought, Trojak, you missed the central mystery out of which all of the other mysteriousness of Christianity grew. And the central mystery, of course, is this Jewish notion of who God is. And it was summarized in a single Hebrew word, chesed. God is the one who is steadfastly loving. God who loves us, who don't deserve to be loved, yet God loves us. And that's the mystery. And that's what constantly has to be pointed to, constantly has to be instantiated. For instance, we just finished the first week of November. I mean, what makes, as a kind of footwork, what makes the church credible, really? The fact that we've been around for 2,000 years? The fact that we just have these enormous tradition of laws and ceremonies and artwork and buildings and this great panoply of power? No! One of the present Pope's favorite theologians is a guy named Hans Urs von Balthasar, a Swiss, who published a little book, which the title of which sums up the whole thing, Nur Liebe ist glaubhaft. Only love is believable. Only love is believable. And it's exactly the job of the prophets, with that blazing consciousness, to go out and often enough to contradict, to oppose the routine fashion which has developed to make religion go. And religion needs routinization. But the danger's clear, The priests, whose power is palpable, mensurable, are regularly tempted to say, that's all there is. What we have for you is all there is. And in the Roman Church, of course, this has created this pernicious situation where we have two-story spirituality. Oh, Father, pray for me, because I'm sure God hears your prayers. Me, I'm just a poor slob. Folks, that's rubbish. There is one call to sanctity. One call to sanctity. One and only one. And there are multiple ways of working that out, of course. But unhappily, in the history of the Roman Church, where, for instance, the elevation of celibacy is as a preferred lifestyle, I vividly remember driving a young Holy Cross brother across the U.S. one day. He said, well, obviously I am superior to lay Christians because I have the vow of chastity. I thought, you poor dumb bugger. And yet he was not exceptional in any way. The Pope just canonized, for example, a married couple. You may have heard of this. The strange thing about this married couple is they took vows of celibacy. What's going on? So if we were to look at the church today, the church that we are, the belief of the early Jesus movement is that with the resurrection of Jesus, the end time had come and the Spirit had been poured out on all flesh. You may remember the Pentecost narrative of the book of Acts, where Luke quotes the prophet Joel, your young men will dream dreams, your old men will have visions. And the Spirit of the Lord will fill the earth. Us! You see, and it's the Spirit, of course, that is the prophetic impulse, that provides the prophetic impulse. The Spirit of the Lord has anointed me, Isaiah will say. Therefore, this is what God has to say about the world. And here, let me say something, because I heard this, Diane put me on to this god-awful interview with Tim LaHaye, who sold 50 million books out of this fundamentalist Christian belief in the rapture. And one of the most infuriating things about him is that he constantly referred to biblical prophecy. Biblical prophecy. And biblical prophecy, in Tim LaHaye's reading of the thing, which has nothing biblical about it at all, is that the prophets were there as predicting the future. Jack Van Impe, Jerry Falwell, you find this over and over and over. That was not the prophetic task. That was not the prophetic task ever, ever, ever in Judaism. The prophetic task is manifested very clearly in this passage from Malachi, where he complains about the priests. Since you do not keep my ways, but show partiality in your decisions. Notice that. Partiality in your decisions. You break up the human community. You do not do what this steadfastly loving God is interested in accomplishing on the earth, which is to love universally and to inspire universally. So this is, and then we get Jesus. Who is Jesus? Jesus is some guy off the street, for God's sake, who did exactly the same thing as all the classic prophets did. You swallow gnats and strange camels. I hope that's right. I keep getting that mixed up. Swallow camel and strange gnats. I beg your pardon. I got it wrong. You missed the point. And why you missed the point is very clear, because authority and power has been centralized, located in you and you alone, and nobody else has anything to say. Because certainly this is one of the things that happens to Roman Catholicism, where the priest and prophet roles were elided. Who is a prophet? I've been wondering all week, therefore, who are prophets? Dorothy Day, who carried on a lifelong battle with the Cardinal Archbishop of New York, Francis Spellman. Daniel Berrigan, whom we cannot even get in Canada to speak because he's an official felon in the States. I can go down the list of person after person after person who does make God credible. Nur liebe es glauben. And that's what all this business of service is about, huh? The greatest among you must be your servant. And so we have 1,000 years of a constantly growing imbalance between the priestly and the prophetic roles in the church. Prophet who says, this is what God has to say about what's going on here and now. Now, if you were to take, if you don't believe me, look at the incident from the pedophilia thing. Did the bishops stand up and say, yeah, we did this, yeah, we did this? No, they ran and they hid consistently. They ran and they hid consistently. What's going on here? Where is love? Where is the love that is believable operating here? So where do we go from here? I do not know. I do not know. But I do know that if we do not reappropriate this kind of self-understanding, that the Spirit of God is poured out universally, despite bishop after bishop refusing to allow the voice of the faithful, this reform group that founded itself in Boston a few months ago, to even meet on church property. If we do not examine this again, then we are resisting the Spirit. We are sinning against the Spirit, which the Gospel of Luke says, of course, is the great